is the 1A Record Club.
The 1A Record Club. This is 1A.
1A.
1A Record Club.
Hey! Let's go!
Welcome to the 1A Record Club.
It's the 1A Record Club. Today we're bringing you our conversation with Irish singer-songwriter Hozier. He has a new EP out now, a new album coming soon, and later this year, he'll celebrate the 10-year anniversary of his debut single and biggest hit, Take Me to Church. Since that debut single, he's become a superstar with a 2015 Grammy nomination, two international tours, and both critical and public acclaim. His 2019 album, Wasteland Baby, offered him the opportunity to perform with blues icon Mavis Staples on the song Nina Cried Power. His newest project is called Eat Your Young. It's a three-song EP inspired by Dante's Inferno, part of the epic poem about the nine circles of hell, and it's a precursor for his third upcoming album, Unreal Unearthed. His latest EP is his first project since the 2019 album Wasteland Baby. We spoke with Andrew Hozier Byrne on March 17th, which happened to be his birthday, for our March edition of the 1A Record Club. After this quick break, we bring you that conversation. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We'll be back in just a moment. It's the 1A Record Club. Today we're bringing you our conversation with Irish singer-songwriter Hozier. I started by asking him how he's feeling about the new project.
I'm just eager to get it out there, I think. You know, I've been kind of sitting with a lot of these ideas in my pockets for some time. So it just feels good. I feel very grateful to be able to release music. And it's a pleasure to do it on my birthday, I have to say. But yeah, I feel good. I'm ready. Hmm. I'm ready to share this work, yeah.
A lot of our audience wants to wish you a happy birthday. Nath writes on Twitter, "Happy birthday, Andrew. Could you describe your new EP in three words?"
That'll be tricky. You got me on the spot there, but I will try. I would say more to come.
More to come.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the three words, but now I need to know what you mean.
I just mean, it just acts as a little bit of an introduction, I suppose, for more music that I will be releasing over the rest of the year, the next coming months, and you know, with an album for late summer. But I think two of the songs are definitely part of that body, that larger body of work, which will be about 16, 17, maybe 17 songs, I think.
That's a 18 big songs. Project then.
Yeah. Wanted to make sure that there's enough meat on the bones for when, you know, I'll definitely share a few songs between now and then, but that's why I say it.
Why these three songs to sort of whet our appetites for what's coming?
I think Eat You Young is one of my favorites off the project. I had a lot of fun. I think it's a fun song. It's a playful song. It's a little bit tongue in cheek. I think paired with All Things End, it offers two very different tones, two very different colors. So, and Through Me in particular, it sort of encompasses like in one song, some of the spirit that for me was hanging over a lot of the last couple of years and something that I needed to write and get out. But that reflection on loss and that reflection on change and not resisting it, but going with it is something that I think it finds its way in the album. It's something that sort of hangs over the album a little bit too.
Well, let's listen to some of the title track from the EP. Here's Eat Your Young.
I'm starving. Let me put my lips to something. Let me wrap my teeth around the world. Start carving, darling. I wanna smell the dinner cooking. I wanna feel the edges start to burn.
Rosier, we got this tweet from Daniel who asks, when he says eat, does he mean it literally? Where did the title for this song come from?
I certainly don't mean it literally. It's not an endorsement for cannibalizing your children. It's more just taking a very, very dry sort of look at more like destructive practices and their logical conclusion. And so the song is written from the perspective of like a very unreliable narrator who sort of relishes in that more extractive motivation, that take everything that you can take and down the expense and down the cost. Mm-hmm. And so that lyric in the chorus is, you know, putting food on the table. If you're putting food on the table, selling bombs and guns, that it's quicker and easier. To just eat your young, you know what I mean? So just skip the middleman. And so it's more just playing around with that idea.
Well, after listening to the song, I actually went and pulled up some lyrics because I was like, I want to make sure I'm hearing what you're singing. And it says, pull up the ladder when the flood comes, throw enough rope until the legs have swung, 7 new ways that you can eat your young, skinning the children for a war drum. And that line really just hit me straight into the gut. And it was interesting to hear you describe the song as playful because there's a darkness in here too.
For sure. I mean, I can't really do one without the other, I have to say, but it is dark. It is dark. And I think it's kind of about sacrificing the next generation's future for short-term gain, you know, really. What they might have to fix or clean up in the long run. But that line, I think once I'd written the line, skinning the children for a war drum, I kind of knew I had a song, you know, so I sort of had to commit to that spirit.
Well, that makes me curious about your writing process and what you're looking to for inspiration.
I think this one, I didn't have to look for inspiration, thank God. I think it was more... I think the last few years, I don't know, I feel like we kind of notice increasingly different narratives emerge and are spread about who we should blame for that. And I think I always found it very funny. Just this is more in the last few years, and me as a millennial, how many articles I used to read about how millennials are destroying XYZ, you know, everything was blamed on.
It was the avocado toast. That was what was doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's true. That's why the banks were failing. I don't know. It's why the sea levels were rising, etc. Fantastic. Absolute fantastical creations that were. So it was more just. So part of that sort of found its way into the song as a response, but also it seemed right.
You often make songs that have a really strong narrative line through them. Where do you see the connection between your music and storytelling?
I think I don't even know if yeah exactly I think the two are sometimes one and the same. You know, it's as you say. I don't know if there is a line there. It's very short, and in fact, it might be a line that just circles around them, and it's they're in the same little one circle Venn diagram. Yeah. I think for me, I was always fascinated with songs as storytelling, and I really grew to love writing music through listening to folk song. And folk music was always a love of mine. And at its bare bones, what is it that you're saying? What is a story are you telling outside of the words that you're saying? You know what I mean?
What music was playing in your household when you were growing up?
So it was an eclectic mix, but my dad was a drummer. He's still really, really interested and still music is a huge part of his life still. But he was... When I was born, he was like a gigging drummer, you know, he, and it was in that sort of, it was sort of that Rory Gallagher generation. Anyone's familiar with that? Rory Gallagher was this Irish blues musician. There was huge interest at the time around the 70s and 80s in like rhythm and blues blues music, American blues music, and soul music. So his record collection was largely, was a lot of blues, a lot of rhythm and blues, a lot of soul music. But he had very eclectic tastes. He also had a lot of new wave records. He was a huge David Bowie fan and stuff like that. So I was definitely the beneficiary of his tastes, I have to say.
When you mentioned the blues, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. I grew up in Detroit, and there was a lot of blues played when I grew up. And I think it shares that playful darkness that I hear in your music as well, where you'll be singing along and kind of laughing, and then you think, like, wait a second. Things are not going well for this person when you really tap into the emotion of this song. Do you think that's part of why that element is in your writing and in your music?
Yeah. I suppose that playful approach, there's an expression back home. I mean, Irish people, certainly in my experience, have a very wicked sense of humor. But the saying, if you didn't laugh, you would cry. So as a justification for having to approach it with levity, or approach it with a sense of lightness and a sense of fun at our own sort of misfortune, and turning that on its head or using it to tell stories that are, I don't know, in sometimes a subversive way, you know.
Let's hear another song from the EP. Here's All Things End.
The last time I fell, you weighed on my chest. You said we didn't get it right, but love, we did our best, and we will again. Moving.
Does this EP, does it feel different in any way for you, or do you feel yourself being pulled in a new direction musically?
I think the musical influences are still very much, I'm still drawing from the same wells. I think I collaborated quite differently on some of the songs on this EP and across the record, where, and part of it was just coming out of a pandemic, spending so much time with myself, being in a space with other musicians, writing with other musicians is not something I'd ever really done in earnest. So I co-wrote some of this work with the producers who are credited on the album. In particular, like All Things End is something that was jammed out in the space, you know. With other stuff, I might come in with a demo, come in with an idea, but let go of the reins of creation a little bit more on this. But sharing it as a collective act. But definitely, All Things End was like jammed out and just sung on the spot, and I made sense of it away from everybody. But that's I think where there's a sort of, also just working with new producers yields very different sonic sort of things, you know.
I want to circle back to collaboration, but first we got this question for you from H on Twitter, who asks, how has isolation and time off at home during the last 3 years changed the shape and depth of your writing or ideas?
Yeah. I think it was a challenge at some points. I think I was always somebody who needed to be alone and have space and time alone to write. And that's a place where I get that's just a place where I find inspiration. It's a place where I recharge my batteries. But I find that I did begin to find, after enough time, there's a difference between being alone when you choose to be alone, and you know, it's like that difference between being alone when there's other people around, and then being alone because you've no choice but to be. And then you kind of keep looking into the well, and you keep finding the same stuff. And then you might find the well dries up sometimes as well too, because really what's refilling it is being out in space, and you know what I mean, with other folk. So I worked with those songs and drew out of myself everything that I needed to draw out, but then also I did find it that I had a hunger, or I had an enjoyment of creating in a space that was energized by other people. And that's not something I ever really had explored until that point, you know, and that changed things for me in a really fun way, in a nice new way to explore for this album.
You described your 2019 album, Wasteland Baby, as having songs that are, quote, ridiculously end of the world. This current EP, I understand you drew inspiration from Dante's Inferno, about the nine circles of hell. It's part of Dante's epic poem, Divine Comedy. How does writing from that point of inspiration perhaps feel like a continuation of what you were writing about in Wasteland Baby?
I think it was more, and you know, the Wasteland Baby was kind of, I think I was reflecting on the end of a lot of things, I guess, that it looked like it was kind of a spooky time that we were maybe entering into a period of sort of anti-truth or anti-intellectualism, anti-academia as well too. It was an odd time, and it looked like that was a dangerous space for organized representational democracy. You know what I mean? And where that might lead us. With this, I think it's more allowing myself. And that album, I viewed it as each song being a slightly different voice in that same predicament, and slightly different way of approaching things in that same predicament. And I think I'm just leaning into that idea of each of these being a different little story and a different little voice, albeit it's all me, obviously, but it's each one is slightly different voice. And I loved the idea also of in that poem of it's a journey through a space in which he meets a lot of different people, and it's a different voice each time, it's a different experience each time. Mm-hmm. And so it's not tied too much to the literature. It's each song sort of stands on its own. There's a few little nods here and there for anybody who wants to go digging, but I wanted to make sure that the songs are absolutely have free rein when they're in their own space, that they just stand up as hopefully as good songs.
We're talking to Irish singer-songwriter Hozier about his new project, Eat Your Young. It's a precursor for his upcoming third album, Unreal Unearth. As we go, you're hearing To Be Alone off of Hozier's first album. We'll hear more from you and Hozier in just a moment.
Never feel too good in crowds with folks around when they're playing the anthems of rape culture loud, crude and proud, preachers praying. From my times when you're near me, honey, when you kill the light, kiss my eyes.
Let's get back to our conversation with Hozier. Take Me to Church was nominated for a Grammy for Song of the Year in 2015. I asked Hozier if the popularity of the song has changed his definition of personal success.
I think it has, and it's something I notice, and I've learned listening to people who are kind of walking the tightrope of maybe becoming a public figure based on a release, and then having to follow that up with another release, and you can have this realization that you are, if your idea of success is what other people say of your work and how they respond to it, or it's something that's monetary, or it's something that is. Some arbitrary measure of how, you know, I think you have to just be proud of what it is that you put out. And I think that for me, for me, there's this beautiful, very wise Seamus Heaney quote, and I keep going back to Heaney. The end of art is peace. And for me, that's true for a lot of, it's true in two dimensions, and or many dimensions at least, well, two at least, but that there will be no peace. You know what I mean? That there, as long as there is no lasting peace, there will never be any no end to art. But just as in a personal level, that's the feeling that you get, this momentary feeling of just having made something, and that fulfillment is really where that sense of success comes from, being able to continue to do that, put out the work that feels that it still resonates with you and it's honest and it feels right, and putting it out into the world. That has to suffice sometimes, you know, because you can't control how it's received. And if you have expectations, if your joy, if your sense of self-worth is based on something else other than your own relationship to it, you're gonna get hurt, you know.
So it's the difference between being externally motivated and internally motivated? Is that sort of the line?
I think so. I think it's trying to focus the lens back inward in that equation, yeah, a little bit.
At the same time, it's clear that people connect to your music very deeply. You put your emotion, your feelings, your passion into this music, and people hear it and respond. So while you're preserving this internal space through which you measure your success, how are you reacting to the very strong response you get from fans of your music?
Yeah, it's a consideration, and it's always something that, especially on a day like this, you know, I mean, it would be devastating if you looked at what your fans were saying. This, I hate this, you know, and that might hurt, you know, and that's the cost of releasing music, and that really is the fear that keeps people from doing it, I think, and it's legitimate. It's so public. How do you balance it? I'm not sure. I think that's a relationship that takes a lifetime to find the balance with, you know. I wish I had answers to it, but
I'm thinking about the way your 2013 debut single "Take Me to Church" just really—it was an instant hit. It was nominated for a Grammy, and you were pushed into this fame, right? So even beyond success, there's fame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how are you managing the fame piece of your success, do you think?
Yeah, I try not, as best I possibly can, I try not engage with thinking too much about it. I think, and like a lot of things that kind of could send me into a spiral of, you know, in any different direction, is I try to just approach it on the basis of who I meet when I meet them. If I meet them, I generally find if people wish to approach me and say hello or whatever, if it's on the basis or the merit of as they view it of my work, that I'm really honored and that's such a pleasure. But fame for its own sake, outside the work or outside the basis of it being to do with people enjoying the work, I try to keep my head down a little bit, and I don't know if it's, yeah, it's a bit of a, yeah, I don't have much of an interest in it, I have to say.
Well, let's play another song from your first album. Here's Cherry Wine.
Eyes and words are so icy, oh, but she burns like rum on a fire. Hard and fast and angry if she can be. I walk my days on a wire. It looks ugly, but it's clean. Oh, mama, don't.
I find myself thinking quite a bit about what changed and what didn't over the past few years. It's really fascinating to observe how we can shift into new rhythms. I suppose I'm wondering, as someone who you said you need that time by yourself, but now it feels like we are very much back out into the world, right? So how are you finding that balance for yourself as you release this EP? You know, you've got more music coming out this year, possibly a tour. You know, how are you balancing that need for that internal time with everything that's going to come along with this new music?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a release week is a particularly, you know, it's always an intense week. I think for me, I definitely have, and I think I have the benefit of having spent that time in studio working with a lot of energy around. I definitely had to reestablish my stamina for having people around and being around and being on and fielding a lot of different stimuli, you know, people talking to you, like a slew of texts and emails, just constant information that comes with touring, that comes with music making and releasing. So that was a challenge to step back into. You know, I was a very solitary creature for the last 2 years. In that time, I hope I put the groundwork down for developing a certain amount of skills for that. And some of those skills I developed on the previous tour anyway, but, you know, gaining new practices that and a new understanding of things that might stress me out and why they stress me out. And I think that was important, you know.
You've made quite a few songs that directly reference social movements and current events, whether it's Take Me to Church or your song Swan Upon Lita. Mm-hmm. And you released it last year in response to both the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade, and the Iranian civil rights protests sparked by the death of Mahsa Amini while in the custody of Iran's morality police. How do you think of your role as a musician and where it intersects with, if you identify yourself as such, your role as an activist?
Mm. Yeah, it's a really difficult question. And I struggle to identify or claim to be anything of an activist in that. I know a lot of people and I've worked with a lot of people. I've been close to a lot of people who are activists in a true sense, and I've seen how much it can cost somebody. I mean, what you just read out there is a perfect example. Like I thought something that I found staggering about the Iranian protests is I don't think we have not a lot of people on this side of the world. There are, but we'll understand the true cost of, you know, that this is a group of young. That was one woman who took a head covering off, and it cost her her life. What it can cost us, what we can lose through our activism. And I think I've known people who, it's a lifestyle. It's a decision to keep pushing that boulder up the hill, and to the detriment of your well-being, to the detriment of your sense of peace. Because you truly believe in it, and you know it's the fight worth fighting, you know. For me, if there is space in the work for reflection, just because it's something that resonates with my conscience, it finds a way into the work, because I think of all things that are worth writing about or worth reflecting upon, I just think that the work, whether we like it or not, anything that we make is a historical document in the long term. And I think it's good to be aware of that, and that it's wonderful to allow the work to be a witness to its time, and to be aware of the fact that it is a historical document, and that it bears honest witness as best it can. But again, I'm a musician. I make three minute pieces of work, 4 minute pieces of popular music, you know. So I struggle to refer to myself as an activist, but there is space in the work for that consciousness. And if in tandem with that, if there's moments that feel appropriate where it can do something positive, I welcome that, and I hope to bring it into the work and do what it can in that sense, you know.
Your upcoming album is called Unreal Unearth. When can we expect to hear that project?
So late summer. So I think we'll drop a couple of songs between now and then, but we're looking at a late summer release for Unreal Unearthed, for the larger body of the work, you know.
And so is it still in process right now? You're still writing?
It's pretty good. No, it's pretty much good to go. It's just there is quite a big lead time. Just there's a peek behind the curtain right now with vinyl pressing and with actually getting the album ready for release. So, but it also, it's just, that's just the timelines that have made sense. But I'll be on the road between now and then. I'll be doing some shows either side of the Atlantic. But I think we're looking at late summer for a release.
When you think about your earlier work and the work you're doing now, I don't know if you go back and listen, mm-hmm. but how do you hear your music evolving?
I listen back to some of the early work. I don't. It's only really in if I need to for live to remember how I played it. But I do struggle to listen back on work. I find myself looking forward as far more benefit to that, you know. But yeah, I think, you know, that first record, I was so young. I feel like I was so young and so and the arrangements of the songs were so DIY. I really was feeling my way. Even working with recording software, I really had very little idea of what I was doing. And what I like about that, and going back and listening and having forgiveness of that, is just the sort of the play, that sort of loose playfulness, that there's a great freedom you have in not knowing your limitations and not knowing the right, quote unquote, right or wrong way to make or release a song or what to write about. And so in that respect, I mean, Take Me to Church was the first song I ever released. And I never thought it was going to be heard by any audience, really. A very small audience, if it did find one. And I think that offered me a bit of a freedom to have all these meandering sort of time changes and stuff like that. So I look back at it being very just loose and free. And that inspires me to have some forgiveness for those moments where I kind of listened back to earlier work and think it's juvenilia, you know what I mean? But
10 years later, how do you hold on to that sense of freedom you can hear and appreciate in your earlier work?
I think I'm gaining back that sense. I don't know. I don't know if I've always kept it. That's something that the pandemic, as you say, we're talking about taking the bull by the horns over certain things. It's reminding myself that I can go back to that place. It's a decision, or it's something you can cultivate. You just have to cultivate that relationship with that space. But again, that's a journey.
Well, we'll end on this tweet we got from Annabelle, who writes, "If you could implore your fans to do one thing, what would you ask of them?"
That's really tough. It depends on where those fans are in the world. I would say right now, if we're talking politically, and if we're talking about, if you're talking about activism, et cetera, I would say it's really important to get involved in first of all, politics on a local basis, and, become economically literate as best you can about how our systems work. And make decisions of conscience and show up if be engaged with what your legislators are enacting, what policies are being formed, and how what that will lead to, and how that might parallel things that we have seen in the past, and to be engaged as best you can, you know, as a citizen within a democracy, as opposed to a consumer.
Well, Hozier, it's been great talking to you. Really enjoyed listening to the EP. Can't wait to listen to the rest of the album.
Thank you so much, you too. Thanks for chatting to me. It's a pleasure.
That was Irish singer-songwriter Hozier. His new EP is called Eat Your Young, and it's available now. As we go, you're hearing Would That I off of Hozier's 2019 album, Wasteland Baby. His next album, Unreal Unearthed, comes out later this summer. Today's producer was Arfi Getty. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. Let's talk more soon. This is 1A.